Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how curcumin and pepper, when you combine them, are really good for a specific illness. And then we're going to go into grapes again. I talked about how important grapes were. Well, there's new research out of the University of California, published in Experimental Gerontology, also showing more on grapes. And then yoga is very good for a particular condition, according to University of Maryland School of Medicine. And there's also a way of removing all types of problems that could cause our heart to malfunction, to cause cancer in our body, even to cause premature death. And I'll explain all that, University of Warwick. And also today, how olive extract shows an important way of helping your arteries no longer stay stiff. And you don't want stiff arteries, you want them very pliable. And a lot more on health and healing. And then we're going to look at several things that we don't pay a lot of attention to. For example, I'm going to have a guest on in the second part of our program, Deborah Kopeld, who's going to talk about the scientific basis for EM radiation, electromagnetic radiation, the risk to our bodies from cell towers and Wi-Fi and smart meters and two Senate bills favoring the telecom and surveillance industries that will endanger people's health. So that's very important. Also today, if time permits, the definitive article on the relationship between vaccines and autism. My citations are all from peer-reviewed literature. And it's just amazing that anyone in the media, any journalist, would suggest to you, well, there's no conclusive proof. Well, the jury is still out. These cliches. No, there is conclusive proof, and I will share it, and we will post the article. Also today, I was watching a little discussion between Christiane Amanpour on CNN and Marine Le Pen from France, who's running for the president of France. Now, there are things I could agree and disagree with Ms. Le Pen, but she was right about three things. Amanpour was absolutely wrong. How could someone who for so long got it right have gone just to the dark side on this? I'll explain, and I'll play the clip, and then I'll give my commentary. All of us who've been around a while, especially those in this audience who are activists, who are pride yourself at least in your capacity to keep up on things around the world, you're well-read, you're probably very well-educated, then you have your opinions about what has happened with the younger generation, and it's mixed. The vast majority of people in the millennial generation, I believe, fit the notion that they are not connected to the vitalist outcome for our country. But if they chose to be, wow, what a benefit it would be for everyone, including saving the planet. But they're not. They're into their own lives. They have their own culture. And then there's a small group of millennials who are very much connected to the world, who are up to date on everything, who have some wonderful and vitalist insights. And I'm going to let you hear from one of those people talking about the truth as they know it. You may agree or disagree about popular culture, because I've given you my views about what I think of reality television, our political system, virtually every institution in America that has betrayed us, and how we are no better today than the Romans were when Rome was in decline. Instead of making fundamental changes, the Caesars and the Senate would put on bread and circuses. They would have gladiators for the spectacle of killing each other, and then they would ride around in these wagons inside the Colosseum and throw loaves of bread, and that's where the concept of bread and circus came from. They would throw a great deal of bread to the people. So the people came, they got to watch the gladiators fight, and they took home bread. So for the moment, they weren't focused upon how absolutely in decline and corrupt and vile their government was. Well, I believe that all of our reality television and our news media and our spectacle and those people supporting all this have used the same playbook. So it's nice when some younger person has their own sense of outrage, their own sense of insight. So I'm going to play that today, and then I'll open it up for your feedback. Also, if my engineers got my... No, they did. Do you remember it was about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I had Guy McPherson on who predicted that we could have less than 10 years before a complete breakdown in our society occurred because of more than 40 interlocking feedback loops that are based upon dozens of tipping points. Most of them have tipped. But the danger is that it's one of cognitive dissonance, that if you're not completely aware in the moment you're in, living in an environment where you experience this, it just is not important to you, or it's not real. A volcano in Indonesia, the melting of the Great Glacier in Peru, so they don't have the water for tens of thousands of villagers, the breaking off of the Larsen B shelf in Antarctica in the next month or two, which would be the, and by the way, when I told you 3 weeks ago, it was 70 miles long, now it's over 100 miles long, as much as 2 miles wide in places, and almost a mile and three quarters deep. Now, that will not raise the ocean water a lot. What it will do, it will allow all the glacier behind it, which is massive, to no longer be blocked from going into the ocean. So we'll see, with warming underneath and on top, massive calving. We'll have regular calving where it breaks off going into the ocean, which will raise the ocean water, as we've never seen before. In fact, we'll think that a small iceberg the size of Manhattan is a fortunate thing, but there'll be bigger ones behind it, because once that starts pulling in the gravitational pull and all that water underneath acting as a WD-40, skidding it into the water, we could easily see something that no one would have predicted. Overnight, the ocean's rising substantially. So it scared a lot of people. It was not intended to scare people, but it did. For most, I just wanted them to be aware of what's coming so they can make appropriate lifestyle choices and begin to protect themselves and their families, because the average person is not going to do a damn thing about it. They don't do anything about anything that's important and haven't, so why should they suddenly become concerned about this? But now someone else is reporting on it. How about that? But they're even more fatalistic. Quote, humans could be extinct. Humans. In 9 years, so says the scientist. And I'll let you hear their perspective. So Guy McPherson and the 14 other leading climatologists are not alone. Now it's getting out there to a larger audience. So we have a lot to share today. Let's begin. From the Mashhad University in Iran, they did a study where they took curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, and black pepper. They combined them and found that it was extraordinarily beneficial for diabetics. And it didn't take a lot in order to, this was a randomized placebo-controlled study, and it was able to stabilize their blood sugar, or what is known as hyperglycemia, which is elevated blood sugar, and reduce oxidative stress. That means it turns off inflammation. And this was published in the journal Inflammopharmacology, and it showed for the first time that their curcuminoid, what is called piperine, and that's black pepper and curcumin combined, can have a very important impact on pre-diabetic and diabetics and help turn off oxidative stress, and that simply allows you to live a longer life. Quote, The results of the present study indicated that curcuminoid supplementation at a dose of 1,000 milligrams per day for a period of 3 months can significantly decrease serum MDA, which is a marker for oxidative stress, and increase TAC, which is a serum total antioxidant capacity, and SOD, which is superoxide dismutase, which is an antioxidant enzyme, which activates in patients with T2DM. So this is all important. So, 1,000 milligrams of curcuminoids and maybe 50 milligrams of black pepper. University of California published in Experimental Gerontology. They found that there's even more protective effects by eating grapes than previously understood. And this was especially important for people who were over the age of 50. The results of the investigation suggested eating grapes can contribute to the prevention of Alzheimer's disease. Now, this is the second study I reported in 2 days on this. And they used people with mild cognitive decline, and they were given freeze-dried grape powder or a placebo that tasted and looked the same. But of course, in the grape, you had all those polyphenols. And the grape powders, which, by the way, you're most concentrated in a powder. And I'll explain this. Let's say that you want a glass of cucumber juice. Well, cucumbers are mainly water. So you juice them, and maybe it takes 4 cucumbers, and you get a 12-ounce glass of juice. But what is really important is not the water. It is the antioxidants, the phytochemicals, the polyphenols, all of the hundreds of different phytonutrients. So if you eliminate the water, you're eliminating about 96 to 97% of the total weight. Now you're left with a relatively small amount. Now, if you were to concentrate that juice, you would wick off about one half the water, so it'd be thicker. So when you get a blueberry concentrate, a papaya, pineapple, pomegranate concentrate, grape concentrate, they've simply wicked off about half the water. That's even better for you. But then if you get rid of all that water, then it's a powder. That's the most powerful, the best, that is without question your number one way. And that's what they did in this study, loaded with polyphenols. And it had very positive effect. Quote, to our knowledge, this is the first application of brain PET into individuals following a dietary regimen of grape supplementation for sustained period. Future studies with greater number of subjects and grape supplementation for longer periods and longer follow-up. And I would agree with that, but 3 months is a good length of study to get good results. Now, you should follow people. In fact, just this week, we have finished our post-health study follow-up. You work with them for 3 months, you follow them for 6 months, and then you can see if they stuck with the protocols, did they continue to achieve the same results as during the study. And it's happened. Phenomenal results. And most people, look, if you had pain and you started making changes in your diet and you no longer have pain, do you want to go back to the pain? Because the first time you go off a healthy program, you go on a sick program, that pain is going to reoccur. The fatigue is going to reoccur. The candida is going to reoccur. The brain fog is going to reoccur. The insomnia is going to reoccur. The overload of bladder in the middle of the night, waking up 5 times, is going to reoccur. So you don't want that. So you're going to be more disciplined because of cause and effect. You're going to see good benefits, and you want that good benefit. That just makes sense. So the takeaway message is, for 2 days in a row, eat grapes, drink grape juice. You can buy organic grape juice, or have grape powder concentrate on a daily basis. And from the University of Maryland School of Medicine, they found that about 80% of Americans will suffer from back pain at one point or another in their life. And they found that yoga really helps with lower back pain. And it's understandable. It's the stretching, it's the slow movement, and it's the relaxing. All of that is good. So you got lower back pain, try yoga. And also, in another study from the University of Warwick, which is in the United Kingdom, removal of ovaries during hysterectomy is linked with an increased risk of heart disease, increased risk of cancer, and increased risk of dying early. Now, this is a study that's found this link, and yet it's been very popular to remove ovaries during your hysterectomy, and you end up having these other consequences. They looked at 113,000 cases of women between 35 and 45, and they followed them for 10 years. So it's a pretty good study, large number, long period of time. So is there another way of dealing with this? And the answer is yes. Now, it'll take me about a half hour, which I cannot do today. But an upcoming program, I'll show you how I've worked with women who've had problems that would have led to a hysterectomy, but how they didn't have to have it, and how you can overcome fibroid tumors and prevent uterine cancer. There's a lot you can do, and I'll share that with you. And finally, olive extract can help take stiff arteries and make them softer and pliable, heal them. This was a standardized olive fruit extract, and when people used it, their arteries became much better, and they reduced triglycerides. So that's very important. And there was a very positive measurement on vascular index. And this was published in Drugs Research and Development. Just use a standard, the same extract you would find online or in any health food store of olive leaf, or the olive fruit, not the leaf, olive. So why not just eat olives? We're talking about 50 milligrams. And that's easy to get. Have yourself 4 or 5 olives a day, and that can make a difference. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. And before we go to our break, let me mention that tonight at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I've got one of the finest thinkers in North America, Professor Henry Giroux. And he's articulate, he's insightful, he's a scholar. And we're going to talk tonight about the struggles of the ill-informed population, as well as a nation of uncritical and divided ideologies, paving the way for the growing authoritarianism in our domestic and foreign policies. And understanding this culture brings clarity to our entry into the Trump era. And why are Americans continuing to embrace the social violence of domestic fascism that causes this to rise? So we will have a wonderful conversation, insightful conversation, for the entire hour, 7 p.m. Progressive Radio Network. Back in a moment, please. Stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. In about 15 minutes, we'll be going to our guest to talk about those smart meters and all of the different ways that the government wants the industries that provide us with our electronics to be able to monitor every single thing we do. What do I mean? Well, they want to hear all your conversations. They want to watch you in your home. Are you aware that every one of the new computers, all of the new televisions are watching you, recording what you're saying, hearing what you're saying? Now, think about that. Now, you could say, well, if I don't have anything to fear, I shouldn't be concerned. Well, that's assuming that you've just accepted that our government and industries would not collude to collect information about you. But they do, and it's never to your advantage. So when they tell you, and rightly so, never open your mouth if you've been arrested. Confess nothing. Say nothing. Because they say, we will use this against you. What about them using stuff against us if you're in a conversation and you have a particular view on animal rights or women's rights or on political parties or on individuals? Now they can use that against you. Think not? Wait till you hear what we discuss. And these are bills actually in Congress now. I want to share a view concerning the Crimea. And this is a very short but very important discussion between CNN's Christina Amanpour and Le Pen from France. Please listen in.
What about money? You have had to go elsewhere to find money to finance your campaign. You've had loans from a Russian bank, the first Russian Czech bank, and you have spoken very warmly about President Putin. President Putin, as you know, is considered a big threat to Europe, a big threat to the West. You know that he's been accused by all sorts of intelligence agencies of interfering in not just the US, but in European democratic elections as well. And you, who talk so profoundly about valuing the sovereignty of France, surely must have a view on the violation of the sovereignty of Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea. I'd like to understand why you're so fond of Mr. Putin, and do you believe that you should lobby for the sanctions to be removed from him?
Well, what if I went to borrow money from an American bank?
No, I'm actually not talking about Putin.
More shocking.
I'm now talking about Putin, not just the loan, but what you've said about him, that you respect him, that you find him a good and strong leader.
Mais madame, la nation russe est une grande nation.
The Russian nation is a great nation. They made their choice. Whether I like it or not, it doesn't really make any difference.
Est-ce que la Russie doit être un allié pour la France?
Should Russia be a model for France? No. Should Russia be an ally for France? Yes. Same thing with the United States.
Does it not bother you that a big country broke international law and invaded and annexed a small country? I mean, that's the base of international law.
Il y a eu un coup d'état en Ukraine.
There was a coup d'état in Ukraine.
That's what you think.
Non, c'est pas mon avis.
It's not just what I think. It's the reality. There was a coup d'état. There was an agreement among different nations, and the next day, this agreement was broken, and some people took power.
There was after the invasion and the annexation. Yes.
Mais il n'y a pas eu d'invasion de la Crimée. Enfin, écoutez,
no
faut
invasion
arrêter
de of Crimea.
But they annexed Crimea. Non, it was part of Ukraine. Non, and French were part of the deal that guaranteed the independence of Ukraine in 1994. It's really important, this, because it's the fundamentals of international law.
La Crimée était russe. D'accord? La Crimée a toujours été russe.
Crimea was Russian. It has always been Russian. It's not that long ago. It was given.
So it's fine for you, though.
By Soviet leaders.
But you're okay with it, are you?
The people feel Russian. The people decided by a great majority that they wanted to belong to Russia. So we can't be democratic when it suits us and then reject.
So you support lifting the sanctions? I'm trying to ask you that. Or should they be conditional to the implementation of the ceasefire agreement known as the Minsk Accord?
What's important what you're listening to is here is complete propaganda by CNN. I do not have the time now. I will save this for my evening show tonight, where with Professor Girard, or Professor Henry Giroux, I will give a detailed history of France's illegal activities, the United States' illegal activities, Britain's illegal activities, Germany's illegal activities, and Italy's illegal activities just in the last century, to show you the gross hypocrisy of what she's talking about. I'll also give you the specific details of how Nuland at the State Department, Hillary Clinton at the State Department, and the CIA engineered a coup in the Ukraine. And clearly, she's capable of knowing this. She's playing a propagandist, ill-suited, because at one time I respected her as a journalist, not now. So I'll deal with this in detail tonight. Now, before we go to our guest, I'd like for you to hear a millennial speaking out about what it means today to look out at the social landscape, the cultural landscape, what this one person, remember, that's his views. You can agree or disagree with him in part or whole, but it's important that millennials be able to see what's happening, articulate it, and challenge it. Listen in, please.
Popular culture is more vulgar, vapid, self-absorbed, hedonistic, and dehumanizing than at any other time in living memory. Culture is supposed to be uplifting. It's supposed to infuse our lives with intrigue, lust for knowledge, and appreciation of beauty. Instead, for the past two decades, pop culture has only served as a sewer pipe of projectile diarrhea aimed directly at our gawping mouths. By its very definition, popular culture has always been mass-produced for mass consumption. But over the last 20 years, as I'm sure you've noticed, pop culture has become significantly more vacuous and obscene. It's a rancid assault on the senses. Why is popular culture so contrived, plastic, empty, meaningless, grotesque, and incredibly retarded? Because from the 20th century onwards, post-modernist, moral relativist, critical theory espousing, cultural Marxist nihilists began to seize control of society. Postmodernism seeks to erase the distinction between high culture and popular culture. They want to turn everything on its head. In simple terms, postmodernists have sought to reshape society in their image. And that's why everything's so ugly. From architecture, to art, to music, to entertainment, they're making everything hideous. The goal? To completely undermine the foundation of Western civilization and leave us open to subversion and capitulation. Look at television. TV's endless portrayal of broken families, emasculated male figures, and aberrant, nihilistic, droog-like youths. The stars of so-called reality television are virtually always narcissistic, amoral, and borderline insane. They have no redeeming traits, indoctrinating us with the idea that this is actual reality, that this is how we should act too.
You're beginning to think that the tube is reality and that your own lives are unreal. You do whatever the tube tells you. You dress like the tube, you eat like the tube, you raise your children like the tube, you even think like the tube. This is mass madness, you maniacs!
In the decadent late stages of a society, bizarre behavior proliferates and is legitimized by the dominant culture. They're fetishizing pathology. We're even seeing the mainstreaming of pedophilia by the news and entertainment media. Salon.com giving a platform to a wannabe child molester. Articles that legitimize watching child porn. A new Fox show that shows a transgender six-year-old wearing a sadomasochistic ball gag. This is all intended to drag us down into the gutter. Once we absorb this kind of degeneracy, our moral filter is irreparably damaged. Studies show that the more TV you watch, the more depressed you are, even for active people who exercise regularly. And is it really any wonder, given the warped and corrosive view of humanity that is perpetuated by television?
We are their cattle. We are being bred for slavery. The rebel.
Can somebody please explain to me what the hell that's all about?
Is that idiot licking his nuts again?
Popular culture is also hypersexualized. It's not prudish to observe that the sexual imagery we're bombarded with by television is infinitely more gratuitous than it was just 25 years ago. Even pornography itself is becoming uglier and nastier. It's documented that this hypersexualization process has normalized cheating and betrayal. It's this, oh, everyone else is doing it, so why not me, mentality. Hypersexuality in popular culture leads to ruined relationships and failed marriages. Pop culture is making us miserable and lonely. Look at the cult of celebrity. Being famous used to require having actual talent, even as recently as 20 years ago. Now, the measure of fame a celebrity achieves is directly proportionate with the volume of tasteless debauchery that they inflict on the world. Vulgarity has replaced talent. The more vulgar and ostentatious, the better. Thanks to
one millennial sharing his perspective. And I think it's refreshing to have people, whether you agree or disagree, to have a perspective that may challenge yours or may align with them. Now, tomorrow, I'm going to play perspectives from a person who I find incredibly insightful, George Carlin. We have assimilated the best clips of George Carlin, And this is for those people who have gone nuts, absolutely insane over this Milo guy. And so I'd never seen him. So I decided to, over the weekend, since I wasn't traveling one day, I went up and saw about 15 of his clips, his interviews and his lectures. I'll save my perspective, but I'm going to juxtapose some of his statements with George Carlin, then I'll give you a commentary on that afterwards. I just believe that we are living in an extraordinarily vacuous culture. For me, it's vacuous. For many others who are progressive-minded, it's vacuous. And when I look around to see how few people are actually demonstrating or making adjustments in their own life, not just demonstrating, because if you go out there and you demonstrate against corporatizing America, and then you go right after the demonstration and you go over to a Starbucks and then you go to McDonald's and then you get into an Uber cab or you're wearing their jeans and you're using their credit cards, then you're a hypocrite. And I believe that there's a time for us to acknowledge, are we willing to be the change that we're demanding other people pay attention to, or are we just out there mouthing? So this will be discussed on tomorrow's program. Back in a moment with my guests. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you, all of those listening on land-based stations, our sister station where I've been every day for 40 years, WBAI in New York, and all the countries where people are listening. This is the number one listened to progressive radio program on the planet, and we appreciate your being here with us. And by the way, for any of the programs, Monday to Friday, noon to 1, you can listen over any portable listening device, from a regular land-based phone to a cell phone to your computer. Let me give you the number to listen live, 701-801-3662, 701-801-3662, or the archives where most people listen to the program. They listen at night, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And we just got our latest, and I'm out on the road, so I rely upon Jesse and the people in the studio. Our latest demographics, the average person listening to this program each day, 37-year-old, college-educated woman listening at night over the internet. So you'd be surprised who's listening. Let's now say hello to Deborah Kopold. She is an environmental consultant to physicians and attorneys on environmental-related illnesses, and she's developed and overseen for the passages of legislative initiatives to protect the public from cell tower radiation and wireless technologies. And she is also a review editor for the radiation and health section of the journal Reviews on Environmental Health. She holds degrees from Harvard and MIT. And it's nice to have you with us today, Deborah.
Thanks for having me back, Gary.
Deborah, the Senate bill, S-19... the Mobile Act bill. This bill would exempt small cell G5s from Telecommunications Act. Sponsors John Thune, a Republican from South Dakota. Talk about the negative effects that we're not told about in none of the advertising on television when it comes to buying a cell phone or living in an apartment where you have a cell phone tower on your roof and may not know it. And the scientific literature is rather devastating. Take us through it, please.
Gary, what we have is a secondhand radiation problem in this country, and it's already a public health problem. What started off as a geographical problem, living too close to a cell tower or holding a cell phone up to your head, excessive use of a cell phone, is now a public health problem. You know, it reminds me very much in the first century AD, Pliny the Younger warned that asbestos was a problem. And we seem to have forgotten that knowledge in the 20th century. Asbestos exploded in this country. Now it's been reined in, banned in other countries, severely restricted in the U.S., but we forgot this knowledge from the first century AD. Now we've accelerated or compressed the timetable by which we're forgetting information. If you go back to 1993, not too long ago, California Public Utilities Commission warned people not to have cell towers near schools or near hospitals. And people who wrote local zoning codes interpreted that information, said, okay, well, if we have to protect those sensitive populations also live in residences, so we have to be smart about where we site cell towers. One of the earliest cell tower laws was in Wayland, Massachusetts. The founder of Bose Radio lived there and made sure that the cell towers were in the industrial section of town, far away from residences, so there was a clear separation. Radiation drops with the square of distance. That was good public policy. A number of municipalities around the country put in good laws citing them. Some of the good ones are in Hempstead, New York, Palm Beach County, where cell towers have to be kept 1,500 feet away from homes, synagogues, churches, and schools, which is good public policy. Mind you, I think most people in the Hempstead School District don't realize that the industrial strength Wi-Fi they've put in the school exposes the kids to way more radiation than a cell tower that would have been sited right outside the school, keeping in mind that cell towers were supposed to be kept 1,500 feet away. So the Wi-Fi in schools is exponentially a worse problem. I'll get back to that later. The problem with this bill is that it would put these small cell towers from the 5G network onto utility poles outside of people's homes. And the concept here, again, that people have forgotten is that when you bring the radiation closer, when you bring the transmitter in closer, you up the radiation dose. Radiation is more a factor of how close you are to the transmitter, more so than total power output. You can see this in FCC OET bulletin number 65, 69, just by looking at basic physics of a radiation antenna. So people, that's why they don't understand that Wi-Fi, which seems to have smaller antennas, can expose you to much more radiation than a cell tower that's, you know, sited too close, or certainly one that's sited farther away. So this bill is really a power grab, and it doesn't necessarily gut the Telecom Act because you can still site them, but if your local code doesn't have a siting mechanism that keeps these cell towers or even these small cells away via a setback saying, okay, they have to be X yay distance away from residences, or they just have a simple code that says, well, you know, we might prefer industrial sections to residential sections. Many have something less strong than that. You could wind up, after the planning board and the zoning board in New York look at these things, having one of these things right outside of your house. They first started citing them in Long Island, Lafayette, California, where there's multi-million dollar homes. They were putting these small cells, and people didn't know what they were until after they went up. And so besides the fact that the radiation is now going to be made more ubiquitous, it's going to be raised in residential neighborhoods, this will create violations of the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Fair Housing Act. The Fair Housing Act, right now we have people who filed with HUD and local human rights commissions to get wireless metering infrastructure, whether it's from your local water meter or the electric meter, sited away from their homes or turned off or have a wired meter put back so that they can inhabit their own homes. If you're going to have this in every nook and cranny, there's going to be nowhere to go for these people, and it's going to be impossible to comply with these federal statutes. And when you really look at the science, there's been some studies done on these millimeter waves. Now, these millimeter waves for the 5G are higher frequency. They're 20 to 90 gigahertz. You can go into the literature and see that Brooks Air Force Base has an extended set of studies on this radiation saying that it breaks DNA, it's damaging to DNA. The Center for Nonlinear Studies at Los Alamos says that it causes genetic damage, unzips double-strand DNA, interferes with gene expression and DNA replication. But, you know, the FCC, of course, blanket said that this was all safe back when they adopted some standards in 1992 standards that were then readopted in 1996. In 2013, the FCC put out a request for comment on standards. They got 900 comments by experts saying that there's a problem with the standards. They still have not done anything to act on that. And in fact, the Department of the Interior wrote and said that the standards are 30 years out of date, and they're based on a thermal heating, a criterion that is out of date and inapplicable today. And yet, even with another federal agency telling them that, they have not acted, even with the Access Board and the Department of Labor saying that there's a population of people, Access Board says they're covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act, that can't stand being close to transmitters, and they keep rolling this out. The cities of Boston and Philadelphia wrote in that request for comment to the FCC and said by forcing more of these transmitters in closer, you're creating a problem for this for this population, which, you know, has these violations, these civil rights violations. In fact, they're called human rights violations in Canada. Their Standing Committee on Parliamentary Committee on Health said that it was a violation of the Canadian Human Rights Act not to accommodate people who have this problem. The EU is saying it's 3 to 5% of the population. There was just a recent article in Mother Jones magazine about a dot-com millionaire who has this problem, who has to stay away from the radiation, you know, turn off Wi-Fi, not live close to a cell tower, so on and so forth. And Amy Worthington of the Idaho Observer just published another piece called Antenna Sickness is Everywhere, because, again, this is a public health problem. And you have to understand that by having these small cells close to you or having being an industrial-strength Wi-Fi, you are exposing yourself, whether you have a kid in school with this, you know, extended Wi-Fi system, you're exposing yourself to extreme levels of radiation. They're called levels of extreme concern per the Building Biology Institute guidelines, and it's unacceptable. So that's Bill S-19. And then you have Bill S-88, which is sort of a companion bill. It's called the Digit Bill. And this bill provides for a coordination mechanism to gut regulations on transmitter siting, to build out a system to connect wireless-enabled objects, which is the so-called Internet of Things. Now, they want to have an interagency working group to gut regulations. The Radio Frequency Interagency Working Group said back in 1999 that the standards are not protective of human health. And they're routinely ignored. So I guess we're going to now scrap this interagency working group in favor of one to stuff all this knowledge under the carpet and keep rolling out these devices. I just want to pivot for a second to some other aspect besides the secondhand radiation problem, which I think is the number one problem, which should be on everyone's minds. Everyone should call, by the way, their senators to say, vote no on S-19, vote no on S-88. But with the warrant, the Digit Bill sort of creates a backdoor to warrantless wiretapping, in a sense. All of these devices that are connected to the Internet, they can be hacked. Somebody can hack your home sitting in an Internet cafe in Istanbul or watch what you're doing when you have all these wireless devices. They're connected to your computer. They could hack your bank accounts through that, and most people don't realize that. You know, there was, I don't know if your listeners know this, but there was a lot of press recently about Samsung, that their TVs were actually spying on people, that they would record information, whatever they heard in the room, and they would transfer it to a third party, Nuance Communications. They even say in their manual, quote, please be aware that if your spoken words include personal or other sensitive information, that information will be among the data captured and transmitted to a third party through your use of voice recognition. Now, if you compare that to Orwell's 1984, he says, quote, there was, of course, no way of knowing whether you were being watched at any given moment. How often or on what system the thought police plugged in on any individual wire was guesswork. It was even conceivable that they watched everybody all the time. So, you know, you compare, the passages are ironically almost identical, right? And so people aren't even aware that this is happening. There was a case recently in Bentonville, Arkansas, where a man was accused of murdering his house guest. And the police seized his iPhone 6, his MacBook Pro, his PlayStation 4, all wireless devices, right, connected through his Internet of Things. They looked at the smart meter and concluded, well, there was a lot of water used between 1 and 3 a.m., so they must have covered up the crime and drowned the strangled man in the bathtub. There was his wireless Nest thermostat, Honeywell alarm system. He had a wireless weather monitoring system in his yard and a Wemo, which is controls the wireless lights. By the way, if somebody wanted to rob you, they could hack your wireless lights, force them off, and you wouldn't be able to control it with the switch in your house the way we used to use our lights in the old days being just a few years ago. So this is what's at stake, that you have all of these devices in your house that are collecting information, storing it with third parties. In this particular case, Amazon's Echo, they received a subpoena. They wouldn't give the information directly, but they wound up giving law enforcement the passwords so they could log in and hear what was said, because it collected all the information of what was said during when this crime was ostensibly committed. And so, you know, the Electronic Privacy Information Center wrote to the Justice Department. They said Americans do not expect that the devices in their homes will persistently record everything they say. By introducing always-on voice recording into ordinary consumer products such as computers, televisions, and toys. Companies are listening to consumers in their most private spaces. It is unreasonable to expect consumers to monitor their every word in front of their home electronics. It is also genuinely creepy.
Deborah, I would just disagree with one thing. I believe that it would be a very good thing to have every single video, photograph, and every type of communication done by Republicans in their bedroom. Wouldn't that be something? Then we'd see how long that bill lasted. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in that movie Enemy of the State, it's got to be at least 10 or 15 years old at this point. It was with Gene Hackman. They were recording the right-wingers who had sort of let loose these recording devices. They stuck them in their hotel room. I think John Voight was the character, and after they had permissioned them to be used to spy on other people. So it reminds me of that scene in the movie.
Well, Deborah, just on one issue alone, the idea that those of us, like myself, who's communicating all day long with whistleblowers, with people who in different industries or government who want to remain anonymous, and I give them my word that they'll be anonymous as a journalist, and knowing that every single electronic communication is monitored, the idea that you have to put black tape over that tiny little hole in the middle of your computer at the top, which will block the video but will not block the audio. How many things have you said in jest or just when you're angry or in even intimate with someone that you would not want the world to know? It's private between you and that person, or your own thoughts that are private to you. Now there is no safe or sanctuary place for a person to go to within their own homes with this electronic data. And yet we are not outraged by this. And this is information the government should not have, has no right to have. And yet it's going through.
That's right. And I think that's something that people, I think that's an argument that people can appreciate, that perhaps they have given up their privacy with these devices, but really nobody should be sitting in a cloud of electro smog in their home. Having your home jacked up with all these wireless devices the way this plaintiff did in this criminal case in Arkansas, you have extreme levels of radiation. And it's not just things in your home, right? These wireless wearable devices, when I go back to the concept that I was introducing before, that when you bring the transmitters in closer, you have higher levels of radiation. The expensive model of Fitbit, the one that President Obama liked to wear, has so much radiation, if you measure it, it's continuously outputting. And it's as if you've got a little cell tower on your wrist that's beaming right into your liver or pancreas, depending on which side of your body it's on. And people don't even realize that this is controversial, that it's too much radiation, that there's no reason to have it. You don't need a Fitbit to tell you when to exercise. And if you do, at least have the model that doesn't continuously emit. So people don't have any idea of what's coming off of their devices. You can see this with an acoustimeter. I would recommend people buy one from Magnetic Sciences for a few hundred dollars. You can actually, it makes a noise with the radiation. It shows lights that show the levels as it changes. But the other things as well, there's, in addition to Fitbit, the Apple Watch has a tremendous amount of radiation. At least you can shut it off, though, or power down the radiation. Another sort of wireless wearable is the Tile app. It is continuously emitting radiation. But because it's small, people think, oh, it can't be that much. When I called the company, they were very proud of themselves. They said, oh, you can run over it with a car and it will still keep emitting radiation. The problem is, and I got them to tell me how much radiation was coming out at different distances. You know, again, it packs a punch close to the transmitter. So if you use it to keep track of your keys, some people put it on their kid's backpack or on their dog's collar to try to track the dog. The problem is that you have cell phones as if you're by a cell tower, right, within 5, 10, 15 feet of these things. And even within 50 feet, you still have a fairly strong signal. And this is what people aren't really understanding about what's going on. I just want to read a quote from a report I found from a conference in 1969, the Bureau of Radiological Health. And this was by John Hanland, a doctor who was the Assistant Surgeon General, Deputy Administrator for Consumer Protection and Environmental Health. He said, quote, "It would be little less than suicidal for a responsible federal agency to consider, much less adopt, a point of view that is not geared to protecting the consumer or the user of a device capable of producing unnecessary radiation or emissions that are not essential to the task for which the device was designed. And that's what we've got with some of the devices that I just mentioned, that they're continually emitting. They don't need to be continually emitting. And then having your house rigged, you know, like a cloud of with a cloud of electric smog, which is also creating an opportunity for warrantless wiretapping, makes no sense. And so I want to go back to these senators. I really urge your listeners to call all these senators. If you live in New York, also call the ones in New Jersey and Connecticut. I did have a meeting with Schumer's office, with Booker's office, and with Blumenthal in Connecticut. I was not able to get a hold of Gillibrand, Menendez, or Murphy in the tri-state area. But the problem, this is the problem, right? Booker is a co-sponsor of this Internet of Things bill, right, that would promote all of these devices I was talking about that would effectively appear would gut the radio frequency interagency working group, which has already said that these levels of radiation are a serious problem back in 1999, mind you. And so, you know, the problem is I had a very nice conversation with his aide, but he told me, oh, well, the industry's in here three times a year. We haven't heard this from anyone. Subsequent to that conversation, I talked to people from California that had gone to visit him last year, and when I called him on it, he said, oh, yeah, they came. But, you know, he claimed he hadn't heard this before. Then he said to me, he wrote me back, and he said, well, he said, the NTP is, this is from his email, is unwilling to assert with certainty a causal relationship between radiation and the type of cancer being measured until after their analysis and peer review is completed in December 2017. Well, last year when the NTP results, I don't know if your listeners know this, but in May the NTP came out with the results of their rat study, which, by the way, was started in 1999, so it took them, you know, 16 years to even come out with any kind of finding, 16 years behind Europe, where the judiciary has already acknowledged that cell phones and cordless phones are causing cancer. The fact that we're still even debating this in this country is quite absurd. But John Booker, who's the assistant director of the NTP, is on tape. It's on bioarchive.org. There was a teleconference right after they released the results, and he said, quote, the causality was proven. It's right there on tape. So I don't know who Booker's office is talking to. Perhaps John Booker, the assistant director of the NTP, needs to be subpoenaed and put under oath and shown the audio tape of what he already said. But this is what you have. You go to these senators, and then they deny science. You know, people are talking a lot about alternative facts, and it's important for people to know that alternative
then
facts...
Then why don't you do this? Look, Deborah, I am not at all supportive of just calling legislators without more action, because legislators, first and foremost, the vast majority will pay attention to the lobbying groups that pay their bills and get them reelected. I believe that you should hold demonstrations outside of each of the legislators' office, hand out literature, show what it, the documents. There are over 44 different studies showing that cell phone use damages chromosomes, prematurely ages the brain, is contributing to tumors, including brain cancer, jaw cancer. And if you have to shame them, as we did when we were banning DDT or DDE, then let's do that, because otherwise the influence of 10 or 15 people or 100 people or 200 people calling compared to the hundreds of thousands of dollars that one single company in the industry can write a check for, you're not going to come out on the good end of that. But I appreciate
I appreciate what you're saying,
Deborah, your good work out there. And people can go to your website to get more information so they can then call their legislators. But more importantly, let that legislator know that you've read the subject, you know the truth, you will not be conned. And if they don't vote against this, you're voting against them.
Well, I think part of the problem is that we don't have enough people who are even aware that this is a problem. And if you have I'd love to hear your suggestions for how we get more people to organize to demonstrate in front of Booker's office. So I think
what we will do is this. Send me all the articles that you have on this. We will pull all the articles we have, and we will do a blast out to all the major 5,000 different environmental organizations in the United States alone. So we'll get the word out. All right?
Sounds good.
Deborah, thank you for being on today. Deborah, give them your website, please.
Corporateinterference.org or wirelessrighttoknow.com. People can email me at info@corporateinterference.org.
Thank you very much, Deborah. Deborah, and let me spell the last name, Kopald, K-O-P-A-L-D. Nice to hear from you, Deborah. I'm Gary Knoll. We will follow up. We will have a call to action page. We will produce all the articles so you will be completely informed. And then we will start. When I come back to New York, I will help lead some of the demonstrations at their offices and so we can try to get the public fully informed. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.